Being a ministry wife is a vocation without a job description, and let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, and welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women from various ministry contexts, having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. Today, my guest is my friend, Lindley Mandrell. Lindley is married to Ben, who is the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. Before coming to Lifeway, Ben and Lindley spent 5 years in Denver, Colorado, planting a church designed to reach the unchurched. And they spent 12 years at an established church in Jackson, Tennessee. Lindley is a mother of 4 teenagers and co-host of the Glass House podcast, which shines a light on the challenges of leading in the local church. Lindley joins me today to talk about leaving the church you planted. We talk about transitions in ministry and how to help your kids transition in ministry. And Lindley shares what she wishes she had done differently in leaving. Here, friends, is my conversation with Lindley Mandrell. Welcome, Lindley, to Ministry Wives. I'm so glad to have you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on here.
Well, I'm excited personally to have this conversation because we've recently gone through a transition in ministry and you did it a few years before me. And since I've gotten to know you, I've loved picking your brain just about what you've walked through. So I'm excited to get to do that today. But first, just tell us a little bit about you, your family, and where you are currently.
Yep. So I am Lindley. I'm married to Ben Mandrell. We have 4 teenagers. The oldest we just took to college, so that was kind of a big monumental thing in our household. We served in pastoral ministry for 17 years and then made a transition 3 years ago now to for Ben to serve as the president of Lifeway, which is a pretty large Christian publishing company in America.
Pretty large.
Yeah.
That's a transition out of pastoral ministry and away from the church that you planted in Colorado, right?
Correct. Yes. So we were actually in an established church for 12 years in Tennessee. And then we went to Colorado for about five and a half. And then just never had any plans of being of transitioning out of pastoral ministry more into business ministry, like corporate America ministry. So it has been a huge transition. And so, I mean, we have left an established church and we've left a church plant and we've done things wrong at both. So we can definitely discuss that today.
Well, you've probably done some things right too. So we want to hear both.
We'll share both.
Well, let's go back to, I want to specifically focus on y'all's call away from the church that you planted. So you planted Storyline in Denver and you said you were there 5.5 years and then God called you away to Lifeway. So I'd love to hear a little bit about Storyline first and why you planted there, who you were trying to reach, just what God did in those years you were there.
Yeah, we always go back to this story. We call it our Awana story. And so we were in Jackson, Tennessee for 12 years. Every Wednesday night, we had the Awanas program twice a year. With Awanas, like you could either bring an unchurched friend to church with you or bring 3 cans of soup to give to the soup kitchen. And I'm not kidding you, year after year, we were bringing soup. Like we were going to get canned goods because we did not have unchurched friends. At that moment, our kids were in private Christian school. He had been in pastoral ministry. We just did not have an understanding of unchurched people. We didn't have community of unchurched people. And so we just began to question, like, you know, what's going on? And at that time, our kids were kind of the perfect age. They were very young, elementary school. And we said, do we want to stay in Jackson, Tennessee forever? Or do we want to have an adventure? And there was nothing wrong with staying in Jackson. That church was fantastic. They loved us well. They still do. But for our personal sake, we just thought, you know, do we want to try to do something kind of out of the box? And again, this was back in 2013 was when we did this, when church planning wasn't quite the thing that it is now. NAMS, the North American Mission Board, their Sin City initiative had really just kind of taken off. So we were in with those group of pastors.
Mm-hmm. So you were going just to try to reach the lost people. I mean, that was on your mind.
Well, I mean, what was on our mind was giving our kids a bigger worldview.
Okay.
Honestly. And we just said, you know, we preach about, you know, the unchurched, but we kind of clung to this saying, and I sometimes butcher it, but we're supposed to be fishers of men, but we become keepers of the aquarium.
Yes. I've heard you say that before, maybe Ben say that before, and that is so true.
He said it. And so we just realized that that's what was happening again, and we needed a bigger worldview. We wanted that for our children. And so we just thought, you know, how can we do ministry in a context outside of the South, outside of the Bible Belt? And so really that's what led us out there. And with Denver, where we chose was kind of a suburb of Denver called Arvada. You just have to know yourself contextually, and we aren't urban downtown people. We had 4 elementary age kids. And so we knew, like, we can't pick a city and live in the city center. Like, we are suburb people. We wanted to reach other families who had children. And so that's why we picked where we picked. It's just, how can you minister most to the people around you? Well, you minister through kids if you have kids.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we said, let's move onto a street with lots of kids and near, like, we backed up to an elementary school. So we thought we'll have the most impact when our kids are around other kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about those years, because the church grew in my mind, I don't know all the details, but pretty rapidly. I mean, you were there five and a half years. You left a fully formed, established church with a building. That's phenomenal. Yes. But I'd love to focus on when you say you go with this heart for your kids to expand their horizon, what are some of the things that you look back in those years and go, God did that in my kids? What did you see?
Oh, I mean, just tons of exactly what we had hoped for, God gave us. Just an eye-opening encounter with people of every religion. And I want to be careful to say they can find that here, because now we're back in Nashville. So, I don't want to be so generalized and stereotyped that you can't find unchurched people in other religions where we are currently. You can. We just saw God work so mightily through our children, really, in like their understanding of all different world religions. The thing that we loved the most during our time there is that we were able to teach them to how to understand other religions respectfully. I think that's so important, and I think it's missing in our culture right now, is just to, you don't have to agree with them, but our kids, if you ask them the basics of Mormonism, Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Catholicism, everything, they know it. And so they can have an intelligent conversation with other people about it, instead of saying, my mommy and daddy say that's not the right religion, or, you know, something that we just don't want them to say. Like, that's the quickest way to turn somebody off. So just the way God brought certain people into our lives to help them understand how other religions, how other viewpoints worked was so impactful. I mean, which was more exciting for us than the growth.
That's really cool that you went. I think one of the cool things about church planting is it makes you intentional about getting to know your neighbors and people around you. Mm-hmm. And I remember about 5 years in, so this is about the time you probably were starting to since Godsley, it's just, oh my goodness, this is amazing. I'm so glad we did this, because the first few years I was like, oh goodness, this is so bad. I can't believe we did this. Mm-hmm. But it flipped at a certain point, and it just felt like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever been a part of, and I can't imagine ever leaving. Yeah. I don't want to leave. And so did you feel some of that too?
Oh yeah. We actually, every person's story is so different. And where we had hardship, it was certainly difficult. But like from the moment we stepped foot in Denver, we just felt like, this is amazing. I mean, I remember walking around the block like 3 weeks in, and I just said, this is where my heart belongs. Like, I just knew it. Yes, like we loved it from the start. We had trials, but so the point to where we were being called away was just heartbreaking. Is that what you were referring to?
Yes. So I just would love to ask about that. How did God begin to work in your life where you knew it was time to leave, that He was calling you to go somewhere else to do something different?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Ben and I talked about this question a little bit, because I think that's really nuanced, in that we didn't have a specific moment. And so we kind of threw out these tests to God, which, you know, maybe I should not be even admitting that. But Ben got the call. So let me give you a little background. We began in a real estate business, I mean, a real estate office for our church, then went to the elementary school. Then we went to the high school cafeteria. Then we finally got into the high school auditorium. And then we moved into a building in January of 2019. Well, Ben got the call from Lifeway in August of 2019. So we had just been in this brand new building that we got to build and design for 4 months. And Ben got the call that said, you know, would you consider, you know, putting your name in for the Lifeway president? And he said no. And we just prayed about it. And he said for like 40 days, God woke him up every morning at 4 a.m. and just had his heaviness on his heart. And Ben could not understand it because, I mean, things were going in the right direction. We just moved into a building, that kind of thing. And so honestly, there was three different things that we kind of had to do to figure out, is this really God calling? Is this a test? Like, you know, what is going on here? And so the first one, we talked to each one of our children individually and said, this is what is happening. What's your thoughts on it? What's your first reaction? Because this would require you moving. And at this point they were middle school and high school, moving, you know, to Nashville, to a whole new city and starting over again. And honestly, we did that because we just assumed somebody would say, no, I don't want to do that. And that would be us, like, that would feel like relief to us. Great. You know, they don't want to go. This isn't, God's not actually calling us, kind of thing. But one by one, they were totally fine with it, which we were just, you know, completely shocked with, because they loved it. Like, it's not that they didn't love where they were. It's not like they weren't happy. They just said, you know, if you feel like this is what God's calling you to do, then we need to do it. And we don't want to be disobedient. So that was kind of the first step. And then the second step was that we just said, you know, what happened was that it came down to three candidates, and this was in May, and two of them were businessmen and one of them was Ben, who's a pastor. And I just said, Ben, there's a 66% chance you're not going to get this. Like, you're not a businessman. God's just seeing if we're willing to give up this baby called storyline that we love so much. Yeah. And, you know, it's going to be like Abraham and the ram in the thicket. And so you're going to go, and we're just saying, yeah, you know, we're willing to go. And then, you know, and then they're going to say, you're not the person because you're a pastor. Like, you're not a businessman. I mean, we were just really kind of funny about it. And then he had the interview. They said, it'll be a couple of days and we'll let you know. Well, that night they called back and said, you're the person. Wow. And we want to move forward with you. And so then we were like, okay, you know, I guess that's another. And then there was a third test when we came to actually visit the city. And I won't get into all that. But still, I mean, each one of those things kind of are what we probably sinfully were like, you know, no, God, like we say that you have our yes, but not really, because we're going to test you in this. And then, you know, he kept answering the test, you know, and so we just felt like we should do it. What, even though it was not easy, like we didn't want to do it. And we kind of like wept and gnashed our teeth and tore our clothes. I mean, like, we never wanted to do it. So I can't even say that it came to a point to where we knew it was time to leave. Like, we knew it was time to leave, but we weren't happy about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that,
that was
summer,
a lot of words. So maybe you can help make sense of that.
Well, so that summer from May to August, did anyone know? I'm just imagining that there was a lot of personal wrestling, especially for you. I want to talk about you, Lindley, because this would change your life a lot from being a lead pastor's wife who helped plant the church and was on staff, which we didn't mention that. This takes you into a totally different area and type of ministry. And so I'm imagining there's a lot of wrestling for you personally that happened that summer. Is that right? Tell us about that.
Oh, sure. So he got the job. It was Memorial Day weekend when they called him and said, you're the person. And then they said, the next weekend, can you come look at houses? And then at the end of June, we were going to be like kind of voted on by the Board of Trustees. Well, in the meantime, I'm the director of kids ministry. We have Vacation Bible School that was the week of like June 20th. I mean, I remember all these dates so well. And so I knew, I mean, and our Vacation Bible School had just grown exponentially. And so there were just hundreds and hundreds of kids. There was tons of volunteers I was supposed to be in charge of. And I kept, I knew this was my last time to run a VBS, and I loved VBS. Like, I mean, I could kind of cry now just because I knew it was going to be so special. And so just living through that of trying to pretend like this is a great time, this is amazing, whatever. But knowing, I mean, the heartbreak in my heart was like, this is the last time. And so even on that Thursday, when we ended on Thursday, I mean, I just remember when it was wrapping up, like, don't cry, because nobody knew. And then what happened was that Friday, we had to call in all the staff and say, hey, on Sunday, we're announcing that we're leaving and we're going to be gone in 2 weeks. Like, we left like mid-July. And so, we can save that for later, but those are things that maybe we would do differently now. But it was so, I mean, it was just heartbreaking to try to pretend like things are fine and wonderful. And, you know, everybody come back for Comeback Sunday, which they did, which was also the Sunday Ben announced he was having to leave.
Okay.
So, I mean, it just, the timing was just really, really hard. But yeah, I mean, it was heartbreaking.
Now, did you have some sort of a starting date that caused you to have to do it that quickly?
Yeah, they wanted him to start as of July 1st. He didn't have to be on location. But then we also, schools in Tennessee start the very first of August. So, I mean, you know, they were starting like August 3rd. So we had to get home, I mean, get to Nashville, get settled, get moved in, you know, try to meet somebody, you know, before they start, you know, early August. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of why that sped so quickly.
Yeah. Well, we just recently made a transition as well, and ours was very quick as well because of school mm-hmm. starting. And yep. that was really hard for us, and that was really hard for our church that we left,
yes.
the church we had planted. So I'd love to hear how did your church react to this news? I mean, I was a little bit taken aback about some of the responses, and it was all really encouraging and good, but at the same time, the shock and the surprise was really hard for me because mm-hmm. we're no longer the pastor and the pastor's wife. We're not going to be the ones to pastor people through this, but yet people are still see you in that and you're absorbing their responses. So I'm wondering how that was for you. And how your church reacted?
Not well. They didn't respond well. And a lot of it was because in the West, so to give some context, Lifeway, right when this was happening, had the year before shut down all their stores.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And so what Denver people knew of Lifeway was that it was a chain bookstore that we had one of in the whole state of Colorado, and it had just closed.
Okay.
And so they were confused. They didn't understand, like, why are you leaving this great thing to go to something that is dying? They didn't understand that there's, you know, all sorts of curriculum and Bibles being created, all that kind of stuff. And so that was really hard when they don't. So there were comments of our hearts were not pure in it because, you know, it wasn't going to a church ministry. Like, maybe that it was seen as climbing a ladder or desiring more money or desiring more of a platform. And so that was hard. And nobody said things that were intentionally hurtful, but, you know, it's kind of like when people lose a child and stuff, people say things that are hurtful that you just can't even hardly process. And so I remember an incident where Ben was preaching and the guy came up to him afterwards and he was trying to be so kind. He said, brother, he said, very few people can do what you just did. He said, lots of people can run a building, but very few people can preach a sermon like that. And you need to reconsider what you're doing, kind of thing. And so, you know, you take these things very heavily and then it makes you question, like, well, is that God speaking to this person or is that Satan speaking to this person? Mm-hmm. You know, and you question, like, well, are we doing the right thing or are we doing the wrong thing? And you don't know. Like, there's just no way to know. And this is when trust and faith in God comes in. And but it was really hard. They didn't understand. And I don't blame them for not understanding.
Yeah. And there's a sense of ownership, right or wrong, that people feel about their pastors. And so it's really hard to release them to other people or to mm-hmm. a different kind of ministry. And you know, it's understandable the shock and the sadness that they feel.
Yes.
But it's true. It becomes a very, I would describe it as like that circle on the screen that gets really small and there's this one little dot in the middle. It's really comes down to between my husband and me, what do we sense mm-hmm. that the Lord is doing? And we have to obey that even if people don't understand.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, one thing that you had talked about was just leaving in that both the established church and both and then with the church plant, neither time did we have many people praying about this with us.
Right.
Because of what you just said, in that it ultimately comes down to how God is leading our family.
That's right.
And sometimes we pollute it with too many different voices of, you know, what do you think and what do you think? Well, they can't know how God's working in our own personal lives or what that God's plan is for us. And so, you know, I don't know if that's right or wrong. I mean, sometimes I wonder, were we too secretive about it? You know, when things are hard on hard days, it's kind of like, well, maybe we should have had other people speak in or praying.
Yeah.
But then on some days you think, well, you know, that was the right thing. So, I mean, it's hard. There's no set answer.
Yeah. We had the same kinds of things. And I think this is when it becomes very clear that this is a different kind of job than if you were an insurance salesman or a police officer, because your relationships overlap so much with the job that you can't talk to people who are really, really close to you even as early as you might if you were doing something else. And so right. it can feel isolating for you, the decision makers. And I think it also can be hard and feel, I'm sure, hurtful or isolating to your relationships. But there is a sense of having to do some of it in private. And you know, I think you bring up a good point, is that for you and Ben, it was happening so much more before people knew. So by the time you announce it, you've already worked through things.
Yes.
But they are just beginning.
Yes.
And that's hard for the church.
That's really hard. It is hard. And they felt abandoned. Some of them, you know, like we began this thing, we just got in this building and you're going to abandon it. To where a piece of us felt like we had got them to a good place. We had gotten them into a building. They were financially very stable. We had very little debt. I mean, all these things to where we felt like the good news is we've set them up for success. The next pastor is in a good position. We didn't abandon them to, you know, a lot of debt, somebody who wouldn't necessarily want to come in. You know what I mean? So every situation is two sides of the coin.
Right.
Of how, you know, what they feel versus what we were actually feeling.
Right. I mean, basically what we're saying is transition is hard. It's hard for everyone. And there's no easy, smooth way to do it.
Right.
So I'd love to talk about what it was like for you as a couple and for you personally to leave a church that you started. You planted your DNA into it. You gave everything that you had. And were formed by it. And so what was that like for you as a couple and for you as an individual?
Yeah. So if your listeners don't know about the glass house, the first episode on there is us saying it did not go well. It was not a good transition. We didn't have the tools to understand emotions. We were just so wrapped up in it, in that it was kind of our baby and we felt like we were owners of it versus stewards of it.
Mm.
And so when we left it, we felt like we were just, I mean, I can't even describe the pain of leaving it. And so we didn't do it well. We had unknowingly buried tons of hurt of just, I think like even unrecognized hurt. We didn't know that we were upset about things. Just because, you know, Sunday's always coming and you have to keep things moving. And so when we left and, you know, got into a ministry where we weren't preaching every Sunday, Ben was not preaching every Sunday. You know, that was when all the kind of the pain began to be formed, to realize, man, this was not healthy. We thought it was healthy and we weren't healthy. We were all wrapped up in the identity of who Storyline was.
So what do you do? That's a great point to bring up, because I think when we transition out of something, we have a hard time looking back and going, what was that? Was that good? Was that bad? It's probably a combination of it was good and it was hard, but it's hard to process. I would imagine, I mean, how many years y'all are, let's see, about 3 and 4 years out. I would imagine you're now coming to some understanding of what that was, what God was doing, who you were, maybe some of the things you regret and wish you could do differently. I'd love for you to speak to that.
Yeah. So when you refer to regret, are you talking about between Ben and I, or are you talking about like which is leaving?
Anything about life there and what you were doing.
Yeah. I think one of our biggest regrets is that we didn't take Christian counseling seriously before we left. If you have started a church, if you're a pastor in an established church, if you're trying to revitalize a church, basically if you're any pastor, there is so much coming at you. And I think even we underestimate the amount of stuff that like every day, especially in a digital era, like you're always being bombarded with stuff. I mean, not just national and local news, but, you know, everyone's opinion about so-and-so Sunday school teacher and whatever. And so there are just constant hurts. And so even if you think that your marriage is going well, I think you would benefit from Christian counseling. And we didn't, I don't know that we mocked it. I just don't think we took it seriously. People would ask us a lot about, you know, a recommendation for a counselor, and we would give them advice about who to see, but we didn't see them ourselves. And so, I mean, I think the thing that we've learned the most is no matter what, it cannot hurt to just have a check-in with a Christian counselor pretty regularly, because ministry is really hard.
Yeah.
And managing people's opinions and perceptions is really hard. Mm-hmm. And it takes its toll. And so, you know, I think when you're younger and you have lots of energy and, you know, boundless ambition, it's like, it's okay. And it kind of rolls off your back. But as it goes on, you know, you kind of begin to be kind of tainted by it a little bit. I mean, for Ben and I went to eat with a couple. They're like 9 months newly married, and they are so sweet. And we left, and the first thing we said was, the world hasn't tainted them yet, which is so sad, because I was like, that used to be us. And then, you know, you just get tainted by it. And if you allow it to do that, and I think we just allowed it, we just let too many things kind of pile up before we said, we need to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for saying that, Lindley. I think that's a really important thing, and I've experienced the same. And I think a lot of times transition brings things like this to the surface that we didn't have time or space to look at. Mm-hmm. And so there's an opportunity in transition. So for me in transition, it's a lot of uncertainty. It's a lot of question marks. Like, well, where does God have me now? I knew mm-hmm. for certain then what he had for me to do, but now it's just open-ended and I have no idea. But I think a big part of the open-endedness is getting to look at the things that I didn't have time or space or didn't want to look at before.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Ben and I are reading a book right now that's really interesting. It's called Strength to Strength, and it just talks about how up until our 40s, we rely on the strengths that are just naturally, like we're naturally good at. But at a point, you start to wear out and you can't always just rely on those strengths. And so sometimes you have to just kind of, you realize that original strength is dying and you have to transition into other things. And so honestly, some of the beauty of transition is that you can think, well, what I've always been good at doesn't necessarily mean it's what I want to keep doing.
Yes.
And so, you know, Ben has a good friend who's a worship pastor, and he said, I've always been good at this, but I don't know that I want to keep doing it, but I'm scared. Like, I don't know what else to do. And so for any of the listeners out there that are through transition, like use it as an opportunity to think, just because I've always done this doesn't mean I have to continue that. Like maybe God's developing a new strength in me that, of something completely different and unexpected that I'm really going to love in the second half of my life or whatever.
Yes. I can so relate to everything you say. Well, I'd love to talk about for your kids, because you uprooted your family. How old were the kids when y'all moved?
So when we moved, the boys were starting 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and Ava was in 10th grade.
Okay.
So all middle school and high school.
Kids are a big concern when mom and dad are considering a transition. So I'd love to know how it affected them. First of all, and then I have questions beyond that.
Yes. Honestly, they did great. So we have a set of family values, and one of them is adaptability. And they did such a good job. And when I say that they did great, that does not mean there were not hard days, because of course there were hard days. I mean, they missed friends. They had to come into new schools and figure out new friend groups and all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't like it was all like kind of sunshine and roses. But that was the kind of the beauty also in saying, in talking to them individually and saying, are you okay with this? Because when we did talk to them individually, we said, you need to know that this will not be easy. Mm-hmm. There will be hard things, you know, there will be changes in lifestyle kind of stuff. And so, you know, we could go back on some of those days and say, you know, this, we talked about this was going to be hard. But they did really, really well. I think where we didn't do a good job with them is that, like I mentioned earlier, Ben and I did not have at that point a good understanding of emotions. And so on the sad days, we would try to kind of renegotiate for them. Like, oh, you're not really sad. Like, you're okay. Instead of saying, I get it. Like, it's sad and you're lonely. And that is so hard. And so I think where they didn't transition well was mine and Ben's fault. We didn't know how to lead them correctly through it because we didn't understand it ourselves. But if I could redo it, I would just say, even if the kids seem to be doing well, have them even do a little bit of counseling to understand emotions, or us help them understand it.
I think emotions, we're learning so much about this too. So I just can relate to y'all so much, but helping our kids name and acknowledge their own emotions and just being okay with them. Just saying, I'm going to be with you in your sadness, or I'm going to be with you in your frustration or your uncertainty or your loneliness, because I feel it too. And I think that that's one of the blessings of moving with kids that are older is they walk with you in it, and you can share more of, okay, we're not sure if God's calling us, but let's pray about it together. Let's talk about how we know God's leading. How do we know his voice? What do we do when we know that? How do we obey when people don't necessarily understand, or they have questions? And I think it's just been so remarkable to watch my children. Their faith is really formed in this trial, so to speak, of moving, just as our faith is formed in trial. But it's hard to watch our kids go through that. We want to rescue them. We want to protect them. We don't want to feel when they feel lonely. We want to, as you said, we want to redirect that because we don't want to have to hold that and feel it. It makes us feel things.
Yeah.
So
I think one of the worst mistakes we make is not, or this fear that we have of moving older kids. Like, I think across America, we just say, you know, well, we can't move them when they're older. And I could not agree more with what you just said of that is actually like, we became so close. Our family unit became close because we had to rely on each other through trials and heartache. They got to see faith lived out because, you know, they had to rely on the Lord in ways that they had not had to previously. And so I think it makes me sad sometimes when people say, you know, we feel like the Lord's calling us to do this, but we just, maybe in a few years, we can't do it now. We've got to get our kids through, you know, high school or something. And I don't know their story. So, I mean, it could be very legit, but sometimes I want to say, take the risk, like step out of the boat kind of thing, because it's worth it. Like the things they'll learn. Even for you guys, I mean, you had a son going to college, but like Ava just went to college. Well, she had a lot of friends who were very, very concerned about leaving home because they'd lived in the same home for, you know, 18 years. They'd never had to make new friends. And so whereas Ava is experiencing some homesickness in other ways, she's not, she knows how to like reach out and ask somebody if they want to hang out. So, I mean, it's not like it's gone so smoothly for her that she's having a blast and there aren't sad moments, but the struggle is not understanding how to like try to insert herself into new scenarios.
Right.
Like she's had to learn how to do that before.
Yeah. She knows how to talk to people. That's good. Well, switching gears a little bit, the church then hires a new pastor. So Storyline hired JT English, who is an amazing pastor out of the Village Church. But the church takes on this new chapter. And so I would love for you to kind of walk through some of the thoughts and feelings that you had as that happened and as things have played out, because I imagine he's not Ben. And so he's going to do things maybe a little bit differently. And maybe he has an idea that y'all never thought of. And it's like, whoa, that's great. Why did we not think about that? So I'd just love to pick your brain about that transition. Yep.
I have two things to say about this. We've talked to other pastors about it. We've experienced this. I think two things, if somebody's listening and transitioning, is to know they are the church, the search committee is almost always going to find your opposite as the next pastor. Hmm. There's actually a study that's been done on this, and it's fascinating of how there's almost three different personality types that churches go through when a person leaves and they find another one. And so what we have just experienced is, no matter, I mean, both our church in Jackson and Storyline were experienced just phenomenal rapid growth. So what we want to think pridefully is that they're going to find somebody just like them and continue that on. And what has happened every time is that what they do is figure out where your husband has weaknesses, and they do. And they're going to find someone that's opposite, because they think, well, you know, Ben could do this, but he also maybe was really unorganized, and let's find a really organized pastor. Yeah. Or maybe your husband's a good preacher, but maybe not super pastoral and doesn't like going to the hospital. So let's find someone who really loves going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. It's always going to happen. And you just need to prepare yourself. I mean, Ben and I have talked about that. If we left Lifeway, they would make the swing probably back to a business guy, because they would say, Ben's been great, but you know, we want someone who does this better. And so I think that we were surprised both times when we've left a place, because they've found someone so polar opposite, and not in a bad way. It's like you said, JT's a great guy, and JT and Macy are a great couple. We've met them. We've had lunch with them. We love them and we love what they're doing, but they are completely opposite of Ben and I. And that's okay. Like, this is the season that God needs them to be in, but don't be surprised. That's the thing. Like, we've let ourselves be surprised both times that the church has found people very opposite of us. And so I think that's one piece of advice. And the second one is, do not give ear to the church members who call you back and want to complain.
Yes.
And we have done that too many times, because what we fooled ourselves into believing is that they needed a soft place to land, and they needed someone to hear them out. Well, really what we were doing is we needed someone to feed our ego and our pride, to say the church isn't the same and we miss you guys and they're doing this and they're doing that and we can't believe they're doing this. And we were not mature enough to handle that well. Like, and Ben and I can be the type of people who fire each other up. And so he would tell me that someone called and I'd be like, are you kidding? They're doing that, you know, and we just get stirred up instead of neither one of us are a diffuser. And so maybe a couple out there is, and they can handle that. But we have found that we could not handle that. And if we did it again, we would just completely direct that person right back to the new pastor, somebody that's currently on staff, someone else. I mean, they need to deal with it, not with us, because we were not able to handle it.
Yeah, that's really wise and good advice. We've experienced similar things in a previous transition. Okay, so just final question. What advice would you have? There's women who are listening who are going through transition right now. What is maybe the top thing you would say that you really want them to consider and have at the forefront of their minds in this transition?
Flexibility. I mean, honestly, I think that the best advice is to go into it with your hands wide open and saying, whatever you have for me in this season, so be it. Because what happened for me is that I came to Lifeway and thought, well, I've always worked with Ben. I'm going to work with him here. And it was a radical shift from what they were expecting. And it was heartbreaking to me because I felt rejected. But what I didn't do was take the time to say, God, here we are in this season. What do you want from me here? And let it grow. Because now 3 years in, I have earned their respect in other ways. They've seen it through other ways, but not because I came in and forced myself upon them. Like, I was too forceful when we first came in. And so I just think patience and flexibility of learning where you are now, learning the context of that church or business or whatever you're doing, and don't assume that you can just come in and recreate what you had at the new place, because you just can never recreate it. It's all different sets of circumstances.
That's really good advice. Thank you. And I do, you mentioned earlier your podcast, and I do want to make sure everyone knows about it because it's so good. It's called The Glass House Podcast with it's Ben and you together talking to couples, sometimes individuals, about all things ministry. And it's such a good podcast. I listen to it consistently. And I love that you spent the first season. I don't know if y'all are doing seasons, but you spent the first many episodes talking about kind of what we talked about earlier, the emotions, the things that we sometimes stuff down that we're experiencing privately as pastors or pastors' wives. And you guys address things just so well and so vulnerably. I love it. And so anybody listening who doesn't know about that podcast, you need to jump on over there and hit subscribe.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Lindley, for joining me. I always love chatting with you. I love your insights and your willingness to just say, hey, we've done some things wrong, but here's what we learned through it. And you just have such great things to share. So thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. If you found this content helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.